Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into really a fascinating mind, Richard Feynman, through his book, Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman.
Yeah, it's less a formal autobiography, more like listening to him tell stories, right?
Yeah.
Our goal here is to unpack his unique way of looking at, well, everything, life, learning, science, and see what his relentless curiosity and honesty can teach us.
Definitely. Expect some, you know, surprising moments and maybe some deep insights into what understanding really means. So, okay, let's get into it. Who is Richard Feynman? I mean, the resume is incredible. Nobel Prize, Manhattan Project, Caltech professor, the great explainer.
Right. But that's almost the surface level. What makes the book and him so compelling is everything else. He was into art, played the bongos, famously cracked safes.
Yeah, the safe cracking.
And a prankster. Just a truly unconventional figure. And our sources really paint this picture of someone driven by curiosity above all else.
And the book itself, as you said, it's not the stuffy academic text. It's transcribed conversations.
Exactly. With his friend Ralph Layton, it feels energetic, alive. It captures his voice, his way of thinking.
Which is all about that intense curiosity, right? And intellectual honesty, plus this sort of playful resistance to authority.
Absolutely. It's a model for tackling any question, really. And it kind of implicitly critiques how sometimes institutions can, you know, squash that natural curiosity, favoring appearances over actual understanding.
That's such a good point. It makes you wonder if a standard bio could even capture him properly.
Probably not. So let's trace his journey. It starts back in Far Rockaway, New York, and you see right away how his unique perspective formed.
Yeah, talk about his father, Melville. He seems absolutely crucial.
Oh, massively influential. Melville taught him to observe and question. Famously, he made this distinction between knowing the name of something and actually understanding it.
The bird story.
That's the one. Knowing a bird's name in five languages tells you zip about the bird itself, why it pecks, how it flies. That core idea, understanding versus just knowing names, shaped Feynman's whole scientific outlook. Deep comprehension over just, you know, facts.
And you see that hands-on approach in his childhood, too, right? The home lab, the experiments.
Oh, yeah. Reportedly, often smelly and explosive. And he got this reputation early on for fixing radios, not by following a manual, but by thinking through the circuits.
Just reasoning it out?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that same spirit, that playful but technical mindset, showed up in his pranks, too. Like at MIT, the who swole the door.
Well, right. They didn't break it. They just lifted it off the hinges. Simple. But it baffled everyone because they assumed complexity.
It's classic Feynman, showing how people often overlook simple solutions. This carried on through MIT and then Princeton for his graduate work. His eccentricities, both intellectual and social, really started to bloom then.
And that's where the book's title comes from, right? Surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman.
Precisely. At some formal university tea, he just innocently asked for both cream and lemon.
Which apparently was a huge faux pas.
And the hostess was shocked. But for Feynman, it wasn't about breaking rules. It was, well, he was curious. Do they taste okay together? It became a kind of metaphor for his life, this honest, almost naive questioning of arbitrary conventions.
Yeah.
Why not ask?
He just wanted to know. It wasn't about being rude. It was about the principle of the thing, or maybe just the taste.
Yeah. And he carried that attitude towards the academic giants, too. At Princeton, you had Einstein, Pauli, these monster minds, as he called them.
Most people would be totally intimidated.
But not Feynman. He just saw them as, well, other thinkers. People to bounce ideas off, focus on the problem, not the reputation. It reinforces that anti-authoritarian streak. You know, it makes you think, how often do we hold back from really engaging with someone's ideas just because we're in awe of them?
That's a really good question. He even challenged the biology department, didn't he, about their map of a cat's nervous system.
Yeah, he pointed out it wasn't really functional, just a diagram. He was always pushing against those academic silos and unquestioned assumptions.
Then came the war, Los Alamos. Incredibly intense work on the atomic bomb project, leading a team of human computers.
Immense pressure. But even there, that playful curiosity pops up. The safe cracking.
Which wasn't about espionage.
No, not at all. It was about showing how lax the security actually was, proving a point about the illusion of safety. He saw these top secret documents in easily crackable safes and thought, this is absurd. It was about exposing self-deception, even in a place like Los Alamos.
Testing the system fundamentally.
Right. But that period wasn't just about work and pranks. There's a deeply personal side, too. The book shares the story of his first wife, Arlene Greenbaum.
Oh, that's such a moving part of the book. Her illness, her death while he was isolated at Los Alamos.
It's heartbreaking. It really humanizes this, you know, eccentric genius figure. It shows the immense love and loyalty underneath it all. It grounds his intellect in something very real, very human.
That loss, combined with the intensity of Los Alamos, must have taken a huge toll, which leads into the post-war period at Cornell.
Yeah, he hit a wall. Scientific burnout. He genuinely felt he'd lost his ability to do physics. His passion was just gone.
Which is relatable, I think. Even if most of us aren't Nobel-level physicists, burnout is real.
Absolutely. But what's amazing is how he got it back. It wasn't some grand new problem. It was watching a plate wobble in the cafeteria.
A spinning plate.
Yeah, someone threw it. It was spinning and wobbling. And just for fun, playfully, he started calculating the physics of the wobble. And that single act, that playfulness,
it reignited everything.
Exactly. It brought back the joy, the kick in the discovery, as he called it. And that led directly to his Nobel Prize-winning work on quantum electrodynamics, QED. How light and matter interact. It just underlines how crucial that pure, unpressured joy is.
Incredible. From a wobbling plate to a Nobel Prize, then he went to Caltech, became this legendary professor.
Yeah, but the Feynman lectures on physics became, well, iconic. Still used today, known for their clarity, their intuitive feel.
And he kept exploring, didn't he? The sabbatical in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Fully immersed. Learned in Portuguese, played percussion in a samba school.
Mm-hmm.
But he also observed their education system.
And wasn't too impressed, as I recall.
No. He saw students who could recite physics formulas perfectly, but couldn't apply them to a real-world situation. It just reinforced his critique of rote memorization versus true understanding. That theme comes up again and again.
He even took up drawing, right? Under the name Ofe.
Yes. Approaching art with that same experimental, curious mindset he used in science. Trying to understand the process. And much later, after the book, his work on the Challenger Disaster Commission.
That famous line.
For a successful technology, reality must take precedence over public relations, for nature cannot be fooled. It just perfectly sums up his lifelong fight against intellectual dishonesty, against fooling yourself.
Which is why he's remembered as the great explainer, isn't it? He showed that genius isn't just some magical innate thing. It's about being persistently, humbly, joyfully curious.
Exactly. Scientific thinking as a way of life, applicable to everything.
So if we try to boil it down, what's the core philosophy here? Beyond the stories, what drove him?
I think number one is insatiable curiosity. As a way of life. It wasn't just for physics. It was his tool for understanding. Ants, samba, locks, people, everything. The book basically screams that this is the engine of learning. Question everything, get your hands dirty.
And it's often playful, right? Almost anti-serious in a way.
Definitely. Which ties into the second big thing, intellectual honesty. Or as he put it, the first principle is that you must not fool yourself and you're the easiest person to fool.
That's the core of his cargo cult science idea too.
Precisely. Going through the motions of science without the underlying skepticism and rigor. Building the bamboo runways, hoping the planes will land. He insisted you have to actively try to disprove your own ideas. Be brutally honest. Self-deception is the enemy.
And that links back to the lesson from his father, doesn't it? The difference between knowing the name and understanding the thing.
Absolutely. It runs through everything. His critique of education in Brazil, his frustration with just memorizing formulas. He wanted that deep intuitive grasp. You have to feel it almost.
He also clearly had this healthy anti-authoritarianism, a disrespect for convention just for convention's sake.
Oh, completely. The safe-cracking, questioning professors, the tea incidents.
Yeah.
It all shows this belief that blindly following authority or tradition gets in the way of finding the truth. You have to check for yourself. Use reason.
But it wasn't just being rebellious, was it? It was always backed by logic.
Right. And underpinning all of that was simply the joy of finding things out. He called it a kick in the discovery. Science was play. That intrinsic motivation, that fun was key.
And maybe one more. First principles thinking.
Yes. Crucial. Breaking problems down to their absolute fundamental truths and reasoning up from there. Not relying on analogies or what everyone else does. Like, instead of tweaking an existing radio design, understanding the core physics of radio waves to fix it, that basic, fundamental approach.
Okay, so his life is packed with moments. But if you had to pinpoint three really pivotal turning points, ones that dramatically shifted his path, what would they be?
Tough choice. There are so many. But I'd say, first, the constant influence of his father, Melville. It's not one single event, but this continuous thread. that foundational teaching about how to think, observe, question, seek real understanding that set him apart right from the start. It gave him his intellectual toolkit.
Okay, that makes sense. It's the bedrock. What's number two?
Second, I'd go with the wobbling plate. That moment in the Cornell cafeteria, after Los Alamos, after the burnout, feeling like he'd lost it. Rediscovering the sheer joy of physics through this trivial, playful observation. It wasn't about pressure or results, just the fun of figuring it out. That brought him back, led to his Nobel work, and cemented that idea that play leads to discovery.
Right, it validated his whole approach. And the third?
Third has to be Arlene Greenbaum's guiding question. What do you care what other people think? He said she asked him that often, and it became like an internal compass. It gave him the courage to be himself, to challenge norms, to follow his own weird path without worrying about judgment.
Oh, that's powerful.
It really is. Her influence, their connection, and ultimately her loss. It provided this deep emotional anchor for his intellectual fearlessness. It fueled his authenticity.
So much there for us to connect with. What are the big human lessons we can take away from Feynman's life today?
Well, it really makes you ask, how can we nurture that kind of mindset? One big thing is the courage to say, I don't know. He showed it's a starting point for learning, not a weakness.
Yeah, admitting ignorance is the first step to wisdom.
Right. Exactly. And his burnout story. It's a huge reminder about intrinsic motivation, finding the joy in what you do, like with the plate, not just chasing external goals or approval.
Totally. And all his hobbies, the bongos, the drawing, languages. It shows that diverse interests aren't distractions. They feed creativity, prevent burnout, spark unexpected connections. He really lived the idea that all knowledge is connected.
We can also learn how to challenge authority effectively. His safe-cracking wasn't just random rebellion. It was a demonstration backed by logic. Ask why. Propose better ways based on reason. Not just because that's how it's always been done. Seek truth constructively.
So for anyone listening, there are practical things here. You could try the Feynman technique for learning explain something complex in simple terms, like to a kid. It instantly shows you where you don't understand it.
Or try applying first principles thinking to a problem at work or home. Break it down to the absolute basics. And maybe most importantly, cultivate that intellectual honesty. Don't fool yourself. And embrace playful curiosity. Find the fun in figuring things out.
Okay, let's wrap this up. If we had to distill everything down to three final takeaways from Feynman's life and this book, what would they be?
All right, three takeaways. First, an emotional insight. Genius isn't just about raw intellect. It's deeply tied to relentless, joyful curiosity, but also woven through with real human experiences, love, loss, and the courage to be truly yourself. It's about finding fulfillment internally, not just seeking external validation. Like Arlene asked, what do you care what other people think?
Okay, that hits deep. What about intellectually?
An intellectual insight. The big idea here is that scientific thinking isn't just for scientists. It's a way of life, a method. Observe, question, experiment, be ruthlessly honest with yourself. That cargo cult science warning applies everywhere. First principles thinking is the key to real discovery in any field. It's about genuine understanding over just appearing smart.
Makes sense. And the universal lesson?
A universal insight. Probably the most practical takeaway is this. Actively cultivate curiosity and embrace playful exploration in everything you do. That's the path to both deep understanding and real personal fulfillment. Find the kick in the discovery even in mundane things. Approach challenges experimentally. See uncertainty not as scary, but as the exciting first step to actually learning something new.
Wow. What an amazing journey through Feynman's world. We've covered his childhood, his breakthroughs, his struggles, and those core ideas that made him so unique.
Yeah, his insistence on honesty, that playful curiosity, learning by doing. It really changed how we think about physics, but also just how to live an examined life, chasing the joy of discovery.
We really hope this deep dive gives you some powerful tools for looking at the world and maybe your own work or hobbies. So the question is, what's your wobbling plate going to be today? What small observation might spark something big?
And definitely, if you have it, pick up Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman. It's just a delight to read his stories in his own, transcribed voice, a true classic.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us on The Deep Dive. We're looking forward to our next exploration together. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.